Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
It's sad and it's shocking because this is something where I feel like both sides are digging in even deeper to things that are not real. Where you see one side going, well, every Democrat hates him and this is horrible. They're all celebrating. You're like, no. Yeah, I didn't see. I mean, maybe I'm sure if I dug deeper, I could find some real horrible assholes who were celebrating.
Sure, not much.
But you know
not
what? Much. For the most part, nobody was.
Yeah.
For the most part, anybody I knew who was a respectable Democrat were heartbroken. We're like, holy shit, this is not good. This is horrible. Mm-hmm. So reality check for everybody on this. Most sane, healthy thinking people, nobody is celebrating this shit. Yeah. They are not. You can find an extremist somewhere, yes. And on the same token, he said this, he said that. Take a look. Take a look and see if it's actually what he said or if it's just what Matilda you saw tweeted, who heard it from her cousin, who heard it from that and this and her, you know, third cousin's cat told them in a dream. Mm-hmm. And now it's on a tweet and must be true because I saw it and all my girlfriends or all my friends said that that's what he said. Mm-hmm. There was so much of it that's not even real that we base our rage on. We have this rage that we have that's based on fear and not reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we live in a country where you can hate somebody. You can disagree with people. You can be wildly obsessed with hating somebody because of something they said. But that doesn't mean that person needs to die. They deserve to live just like you do.
And maybe you shouldn't be wildly obsessed with hating somebody.
Correct. Period. But in this country, you are afforded that opportunity to be as wacky as possible as long as you're not hurting anybody. If you want to decorate your entire space in whatever fashion you want, that is all one side. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to have, you know, a Trump-themed apartment or a Biden Harris themed apartment, you can do that. Mm-hmm. That's what this country is about, is you get to be you. You get to do whatever you want to do as long as you're not harming anybody. Mm-hmm. And somebody crossed the line hardcore yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're about. He has the right to say anything he wants to say without being killed. Mm-hmm. We crossed that line hard yesterday. It's not okay.
And this is not the first time America has dealt with political violence. Obviously, we've seen a good share of it in recent years. We've been in far worse times before most of us were around or were very, very young. And it's a time that I feel like we're approaching again. I feel like the cycle is turning and we're going back into more extreme and more vitriol on each side. The The thing that I found interesting, we're talking to Robin Dreek yesterday, and I'm curious to get your take on this, Siobhan, you know, with the minds of mass killers in your book. He had a stat, 9% of assassination type characters as of this recording, we don't know who did this. They're still searching. 9% historically actually had a motive that was aligned or opposed what the individual they were assassinating had. 9%. The other 91% crazy shit. It was, you know, like John Hinckley. Look at all of the 91% of assassins, their motive has nothing to do with what the person they're killing. So there's a 91% chance that the assassination, the person who assassinated Charlie Kirk, gave a damn about or did not give a damn about what he stood for.
It's a really good point. Yeah, it's a really good point. I hadn't seen that stat, but it doesn't surprise me, because really people who assassinate other people, they're coming from a place of distorted thinking, right? Mm-hmm. And are they psychotic? Usually not psychotic, although John Hinckley definitely was. Mm-hmm. But they tend to be people who are angry. They've got some mild to severe paranoid ideation going, where they have this sense of somebody out there is doing things to them, so I'm so angry about it, I'm going to pick a target. And some of them, it didn't matter, the one that shot at Trump, mm-hmm. He had also looked at shooting Biden, right? Yeah. So it's this sense of, I want to be important, I want to make a statement, I'm angry, and I want to send a message about, you know, who knows what, because they've all got, to some extent, a different motive, but they're vengeful. And they're unhappy, angry people who are just, in many cases, looking for fame. Mm-hmm. They idolize other people who have committed similar crimes before mm-hmm. them. And so there's really this distorted thinking process and this desire to be important.
Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting in the translation of all of it, and you can insert this into any scenario. I'm just going to use the Trump one, not for any political reason, but the shooter there, again, he just wanted to shoot somebody, is the answer to that. But the translation, and this is, I feel like so much of just gets lost in translation, is, see, they're out to get us. Mm-hmm. Meaning, in this case, I've seen so many folks, Trump supporters, see, they hate us. They're trying to get us.
Yeah.
Who's they?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, who, like, we're talking about this one guy. Like,
exactly.
And it can go the other way too. And I've seen it the exact opposite too. See, the Republicans hate the Democrats. See, the Democrats hate the Republicans. Or this supporter hates that. And it goes to such extreme. They want us dead. They want, like, no, I don't think most rational human beings do. But yeah, when we get into our groups, into our tribes, and we start telling each other they want you dead, and the other side's like, no, I don't. I'd like to go out for dinner tonight and have a conversation.
Right.
I don't know why you think I want you dead. Like, right, we disagree, but we keep telling ourselves these things, and then we get more and more distant from people that don't have the exact same viewpoint that we do. And it gets to the point where when you do see them, it gets more and more distant and more off. And then, well, you know, they're, my family's like this, I don't want to do this. And then eventually you're just not there anymore.
There he goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having part of the conversation.
Yep.
And you're over in your corner freaking out because the cacophony of voices that are telling you what to believe, you are just consuming it, going, well, these people, they agree with me. They're telling me this is so dangerous and so scary, and all these people, they feel this way and they hate me this much. And then you realize, if you were to come back to that table, no, they actually just want you to pass the fucking gravy.
Yeah. 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 You hit on something that I think is critically important. Humans are wired neurobiologically. We come into the world with a natural tendency to separate ourselves into categories and tribes.
And I call it the us them process. Mm-hmm. I'm not the originator of that term. We'll credit neuroscientist Robert Sapolsky of Stanford, who I think is the most brilliant person in the world in talking about human behavior. But we're all wired into categorize people. And even with infants, if they are raised in one racial group, you know, their caregivers are of the same race, when an infant sees a face of a person of another race, they have an anxiety reaction. Mm-hmm. So we're all just wired biologically to like the people like us and feel very suspicious or dislike the people that are not like us. And this can be racial, it can be ethnic, it can be economic class. But it ends up with this distorted thinking that we're good to the people like us, but the people that are not like us are the thems, and it's okay to treat them badly. And actually, some of the most fascinating research is that when you get really polarized into this us-them thinking, which the media has helped us do for their own purposes, we actually, as humans, not meaning me personally, I try to avoid this, but we as humans get more of a dopamine rush from seeing the thems punished than we do from seeing our side succeed, which is pretty twisted. And I think that's what we're seeing play out. People are so fired up and so amygdala driven and so non-thinking right now that they would rather see something bad happen to the other side than see everything get better for everybody. Because in truth, the only us, them we should be doing is we're all Americans. We're all us. We may have our slight differences, but it's not, we're running the country like it's a team sport, bloodthirsty team sport. And we want our team to win and we get great joy when the other team loses. So it's pretty twisted.
Is there a biological drive? I mean, you touched on it a little bit, but you know, we'd like to think that we are evolved as a species, but I wonder if this doesn't go back to us just being primates. That we 100%. Are driven to be in these tribes, and this is our way of hunting and gathering. Yes. Instead of going, you know, into the cave at night, we go back to our homes. That we are just really not as evolved as we'd like to think.
Oh my God. So true. I have one guru in life, and it's Robert Sapolsky, a neuroscientist of Stanford University. He is a brilliant man. He's written so much. My favorite book of his came out in 2017, Behave, The Biology of Humans at Our Best and Our Worst. And he really in-depth explores the ways that we are pretty darn primitive. And we like to think that we're these cognitive, logical creatures. And in truth, we're very emotionally driven. And then we come along later and make up these cognitive reasons for why we're right. But we're coming from this place of very primitive emotions. And he also is a specialist in primatology, you know, so he studies primates. And we are, as I like to say, we're just monkeys that got a little too smart and learned how to destroy the world and create massive war. And there's a lot about us that we're not all we like to think we are.
Mm-hmm. We seem to be very much in a world of, or we like to jump to absolutes, where everything is in reality very much in the middle. And there's a lot of gray, and most things fall into the gray. But why is it that we are in such a world? I mean, have we always been here, and we are just communicating far more, and we're hearing everybody's absolutes in our ears 1,000 times more than we ever did in the past? Because that seems to be a big thing of this, of it's this way or that way, period. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in the middle. And this person, you know, because they looked at you this way one day, or you're making an assumption about them because they were at this event or had this tweet or liked this or whatever, then they must be all of that.
Right.
Because of this, it must be all of that. And that's not usually reality.
No. I always say middle ground is where you find the truth. Mm-hmm. And the farther you get out to this extreme type of thinking, you're getting distortion and no good comes of that. So I'm always encouraging people to pause, to ponder, to use that good thinking brain. And if we're ever going to see a shift with this polarization, we've got to gain some skills in doing that and calm down this rage response. But it really does get addicting. People get a high out of being angry. And we can all think of the news channels that feed that want to mm-hmm. keep people angry. And I think the media has a lot to do with it, along with, you know, social media. I follow a lot of social media just to kind of monitor what are the trends and what's influencing people. And I can always pick out the thoughtful ones, you know, on my friends list, people mm-hmm. who are going to, and that's not the majority. The people mm-hmm. who get very polarized into the us, them, we've got to punish the thems. That's worse than I've ever seen it.
What does history show us on something like this, or research about the time window when copycat attacks are most likely to happen after something like this, where it's a politically motivated thing? And this is, you know, he was a very big figure in this, in that world. Mm-hmm. What do you think history has shown us of other times where we've seen a very hot tinderboxes like we're seeing now?
It's really common 2 to 3 weeks, whether it's any kind of mass killing, school shooting, anything like that, that there's a risk factor for copycats. But I think in this climate, every one that happens that gets attention for the perpetrator, they start to feel like, look, I can be famous. They study all the other people and that have done it. And this is another online thing that they tend to get into. They almost gamify it. You know, they want to top each other. And I think in the coming years, I think it's going to be a very fraught time. I would expect, I mean, really, when we look at the number of polarized, angry people out there who are heavily armed, more guns than people in this country. Mm-hmm. Anybody can get a gun if they're so motivated. We're not doing a good job with trying to rein that in any way. In fact, it seems to get worse every time. I think we're going to see an increase that could probably go on for several years.
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, they perceive this as a safe space to have this sort of discourse. And I was kind of talking about this a little bit earlier. Was that, and I'm not, you know, not vilifying anybody who said, let's have this out there at this setting. I mean, in a perfect world, you'd think you could. But we have seen violence like this many a time. Somebody in a tall building shooting down at people. I mean, look at the Las Vegas shooting all those years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about that every time I go to an event that has tall buildings around it. I'm going to one tonight, and every time I'm at this venue, I'm always like, there's a lot of tall buildings here. I wonder if anybody's checking those. And I'm guessing the answer is probably no. It's like,
no.
It'll be fine. And it's like, well, then something happens, and then like, well, what we should do that again. But that's how we forget, where it's like horrible, horrible things happen. It takes just a little extra time to maybe do this or that, or just don't have things in spaces that are going to be presenting as an opportunity for really horrible people. It sucks that we're in a place where we got to do that. But I feel like maybe we're going to need to do a bit more of that. I mean, how does the erosion of perceived safe spaces, I mean, feed into the collective anxiety and polarization that we're seeing?
It's huge. It's huge. And it definitely affects the places I go. When I do go to a place, a concert or something, where I like to go, where they check people for weapons before you go in, which at least here in Portland, most concerts, you got to open your bag and go through metal detectors. Yep. And I'm grateful that they do that. But if I were going to go to an event, particularly an outdoor event where people aren't screened and there's no checkpoints going on, I just skip it at this point, which is terrible that we have to rein in activities and normal social behavior things we'd like to do just because there are fears of safety. A lot of people driving vehicles into crowds. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, we always think guns and usually it's guns, but it can be vehicle, you know, attacks.
Happened in Wisconsin at that Christmas parade. It was shocking.
Yeah.
I mean, and the answer, it's not really a solution. It seems like a big Band-Aid of like, well, let's, you know, basically fortify everything. And we can to a certain extent, you know, until you can't. And I mean, ultimately, this is a mental health crisis that we have people that can go to such extreme beliefs and feel like this is the best way to handle things.
But we're stoking people every single day. Yeah. We're just stoking these fears that started and pouring gasoline on these fires. And, mm-hmm. and we're doing nothing to put the fires out. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that freaks me out, is it's escalating every single day.
And the thing is, and people like to blame the media is doing it. You know who the fucking media is these days? It's each other. Mm-hmm. It's looking at your TikTok. It's looking at your Facebook page. It's not going and watching ABC News, World News Tonight. It's every person that's around you that's saying something, probably not super vetting much of what they're saying, and you believing it. Mm-hmm. So our media has become each other, a very uninformed each mm-hmm. other,
and that's a dangerous media
in our bubbles. And you know, the media, they used to vet things a little bit. I mean, there is still vetting that goes on in media, believe it or not. And I know, like, there's certain places that are certainly slanted this way and that, without a doubt. But it's like, let's find the villain here. It's the media. No, it's mm-hmm. each other. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it is each other. It is not the media. It's okay. Each other, because each other is the media. Social media, the social, that's us. That's mm-hmm. all of us collectively. Mm-hmm. Not us with a podcast, but like everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the idea of everybody taking personal responsibility for being part of a solution rather than feeding the problem and trying to be collaborative, because bottom line, the government should be about solving problems for the populace, making the country work well, making sure that people's needs are met. My gosh, can we do something about the healthcare crisis? You know, can we do something about violent crime, about the mental illness on the streets, you know, among the street people? That's where we should be focusing from a problem-solving perspective. That's the point of government, and we just don't see much of that happening.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.